one of them told me that he said, Jones has done everything to me that he could do short of showing up on basically my front porch. And at this point, I wouldn't rule out the possibility of that happening.
Welcome to the Stand Firm Podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, September 30th, 2025. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm here, as always, with Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. We also have a very special guest with us today. We're pleased to welcome Jeff Walton of the Institute on Religion and Democracy to the show. Jeff, it's great to have you on Stand Firm.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Matt and JD, how are you guys doing today?
Excellent.
Good. Yeah, thanks.
Good to know. So Jeff is Communications Director and Anglican Director for the Institute on Religion and Democracy. He graduated in 2001 from Seattle Pacific University. He's a member of the Falls Church Anglican in Falls Church, Virginia, my home parish. He also serves on the board of directors for Anglican Frontier Missions. Now, as our listener well knows, the big story in ACNA for these past few weeks is the continued standoff between Bishop Derek Jones and the JAFC and Archbishop Wood and the rest of the province. Jeff, you have an article out yesterday on IRD's blog about this. Can you give our listener the broad outlines of what you found out about this story before we start peppering you with questions?
Sure. The basic gist of it is that Bishop Derek Jones, who is the Bishop charged with oversight of the jurisdiction of armed forces and chaplaincy for ACNA. That's the endorsing body for chaplains within ACNA. He unilaterally pulled out of ACNA with his leadership last week. And that had been immediately preceded by a 60-day temporary inhibition that had been signed off on by four senior-most bishops in the ACNA College of Bishops. Now, he has not been presented with anything, so there's no charge. But the purpose of an inhibition is to remove someone from ministry for a temporary period of time. And the argument here from the archbishops and Bishop Ray Sutton is they issued a godly admonition to him not to interfere with an investigation that was unfolding. And he, Bishop Jones, instructed his chaplains, those that he oversees, not to cooperate in said investigation. Additionally, he declined to meet with the archbishop on an online meeting that had been scheduled. So the temporary inhibition was put into place. And the following day, as I said, he pulled out of ACNA, leaving a lot of chaplains wondering where they stood and what they needed to do next in a rapidly changing landscape.
Were you able to confirm that he is the one who refused to meet with Wood? Because as far as I heard it, at least a few days ago, they were both claiming that the other one had refused to meet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the according to Bishop Jones, who did a video meeting with his chaplains after pulling out of ACNA, that the jurisdiction is made available on their YouTube page, Anglican Chaplains, so listeners can access that in full. He explained that he was told by his executive committee, the leadership board of the JFAC, not to go on the call. So he argues that he did not participate because it could be used against him. Obviously, the Archbishop's office contests that and said this was part of the necessary aspects of letting the godly admonition play out. Just to give listeners a context, a godly admonition is not technically a disciplinary act. It is a restorative act that is issued so that it can instruct something. For example, it could bring about counseling, treatment, different forms of resolving a conflict or problem. It could also include personal study. And usually these are kept private. They are only between the person who's issuing the admonition and the recipient, unless one of them chooses to make it public. So that is the context of what took place. And not to get too much into the weeds, but this is a process that has changed in recent years. Several years ago, one of the ACNA diocesan bishops, Ron Jackson of the Great Lakes, was accused of some improprieties. And the archbishop was unable to inhibit him without basically some presentment in place. And in that interim time period, Bishop Jackson is alleged to have destroyed evidence. So what happened is this was a discussion point in 2021 at ACNA Provincial Council. And the council moved to do canonical changes, which would invest the archbishop's office in more power in this regard. So what the archbishop would be able to do is, with the signatures of I think at least three of the five most senior serving members of the College of Bishops, could inhibit someone from ministry for up to 60 days. However, this is something that didn't go in effect until it was adopted by the entire ACNA Provincial Assembly in 2024. And this was a power that Archbishop Foley Beach did not have. It was issued to Archbishop Steve Wood when he took office. So that's the context of what the godly admonition is and what is required in order for the inhibition to take place and how it, that is played out.
Did you get a chance to talk to, I mean, I'm, there's a lot of speculation and commentary on your article, as you well know, if you've looked at X or Facebook. And some people are saying, well, he didn't talk to Bishop Sutton. Did you, I'm sorry, sir, Bishop Jones. Did you talk to Bishop or try to talk to Bishop Jones?
I did not speak with Bishop Jones, and the reason why is he provided a full hour-long refutation of each of the alleged charges against him. So I felt that was sufficient material to relay what he was, what he's presenting on his side. I have spoken with a number of chaplains. I have granted them anonymity to speak on background or off the record. And the reason that that has been done, which is not customarily my practice, is each of them has expressed fear. They have described Jones in their words as, quote, vindictive and relentless. And they believe, even those who are no longer serving in the context of the ACNA, that he has, quote, long arms and that he could come after them. One of them told me that he said, Jones has done everything to me that he could do short of showing up on basically my front porch. And at this point, I wouldn't rule out the possibility of that happening. So that is one of the reasons why in these conversations I've been seeking to understand, because again, the I should back up a little bit. The inhibition is confidential in regards to what is communicated in, aside from the fact that he is obviously suspended for ministry for a period of time. So a lot of what we know about it is actually from what Derek Jones himself has relayed in this video presentation to the chaplains, which took place last week. So that's my primary sourcing of information from the side of the chaplaincy. Additionally, there's a series of documents that have been released by the leadership of the jurisdiction, Jones included. So there's a lot of documentation going back and forth, and this is really playing out in the public space. There's really an argumentation being made to a wider audience, not just in regards to canon law or ecclesiastical dispute.
It kind of makes sense from the perspective of the of Archbishop Wood. I mean, you can't, since the charges are should be held confidential until there's an actual trial, I would imagine. I mean, because just for the sake of the accused primarily, it's not a attempt that doesn't seem to be an attempt to cover them up. It just seems to be an attempt to protect the reputation of someone like Bishop Jones, who, if you just launch accusations out there without any kind of adjudication, that could really damage him more than if you kept it behind a seal of confidentiality. But what that's done, it seems like, is it has given Bishop Jones the opportunity to come out and lay out his case without an answer, without an official answer, really.
And that is the other thing too, is because we haven't had a presentment yet, the Archbishop's office has stressed that this is the inhibition is merely for the purposes of allowing an investigation to proceed. Jones has characterized it as saying, "Oh, well, they don't have anything on me, so they're off on a fishing expedition," and that is his perspective. But I would say that because the signatories within the College of Bishops on the inhibition from ministry have found it to be appropriate for him to be restricted for a temporary period of 60 days, that gives some gravitas to this. And the other thing that's happened as well is that so the Godly Admonition was written by Archbishop Wood and by Ray Sutton, who is, as I mentioned, the presiding bishop of the Reformed Episcopal Church and serves as dean of the province. And I believe Sutton personally delivered the admonition to Jones. So that was one of the levels that took place. And then about 3 weeks later, I understand, then there was the inhibition from ministry. I asked the provincial office, specifically the Archbishop's office, if they could provide me the names of those who had signed off on the inhibition. They declined to do so, just citing the confidential nature of it. However, Jones himself listed the names in his video presentation, and when offered those names, the Archbishop's office declined to, refute the accuracy of that. So the four names who signed off were Bishop Todd Hunter of C4SO, Bishop Eric Moniz of San Joaquin, Bishop Julian Dobbs of Living Word, and Morales of Quincy. I think that's relevant to know. Again, that hasn't been confirmed by the province, but it seems to be accurate from what I can tell. And one of the things that's happened is that Jones has argued in his extensive video presentation available on the Anglican Chaplain's YouTube channel that he is the target of basically an investigation against him because there are woke forces that have infiltrated the ACNA. And he even really was very dismissive of some of the allegations that have been brought forward by complainants when people alleged a variety of mistreatment. He said, quote, "Thank you, woke USA," end quote. So he really is peppering this out as, oh, well, this is an issue of wokeness. And conversely, conversations I've had with a number of chaplains have said, wait a minute, this is deflection. This is not an issue of wokeness and cultural stuff. This is an issue of a straightforward misconduct investigation. So, listeners will have to decide, do they think that these allegations are, but by the complainants are of merit, or do they believe that Jones's characterizations of them are more accurate? I would say that three of those four bishops who signed off on the inhibition, I would regard as in the among the more conservative within the ACNA College of Bishops. So the idea that some of these bishops are woke is, I think, that's a real stretch.
Right. I mean, I agree that I mean, I would agree with you, the observation that there has been some woke infiltration into the ACNA. But that's precisely why I love my Bishop Dobbs, because he's standing against that sort of thing, as the other two are. There has been some debate about Bishop Sutton's role, and I mistakenly said last time that his name was on the presentment, but it's not, because he's the dean of the ACNA.
The inhibition, there hasn't been a presentment yet.
I'm sorry. Sorry. Wrong document. But so what you say, he took a part in writing up the inhibition, is that correct?
That is my understanding,
Okay.
is that Sutton personally delivered to Jones the godly admonition. That is my understanding. I may be incorrect on that, but the godly admonition was signed by both Archbishop Wood and presiding Bishop Sutton.
some of the pushback takes the form of the claim that Sutton was only involved in his role as the dean,
Yeah, Dean of the province.
so that he was sort of compelled, almost the implication is against his will, because he's, not woke, he had to, because of his role, participate in this way. But that doesn't seem like that's your impression.
I couldn't speak to that. My impression is that is not the case. However, if you were looking for the people of the highest authority within ACNA, that would be Sutton and Wood. That they are the highest elected office holders. So that would be the people you would want to, if they were presenting to a diocesan bishop an inhibition. Although I should, as a small caveat, technically the jurisdiction is not a diocese. It is organized canonically by the ACNA and exists under the authority of the archbishop. So it is technically it is not a diocese in the same way that the diocese we're part of are it doesn't have a lay presence, I believe, in the same way that our dioceses are organized and governed.
And I
I'm
think to be fair, if I'm remembering Bishop Jones's video correctly, I think the woke comment had to do specifically with one of the four or five charges, I think, one of which had to do with his like not handling something pastorally or being sort of heavy-handed or otherwise ungracious. I forget the exact words, but I think specifically when he said "Thank you, woke USA," I think it was a dismissal of what sounded like somebody got their the way he was presenting it, somebody got their feelings hurt, and he said "Thank you, woke USA." But I think so. I'm not sure. I mean, I think there certainly was an implication that there was sort of an, I don't want to say nefarious, but there was a plot that was motivated by more illiberal or more liberal forces to oust the sort of conservative stalwart. But I think that specific quote had to do less with like a general sense and more of the specific. Although I do think that there was a constant or there was a repeated implication to your point, Jeff, that there's been sort of he's sort of considered himself a marked man to a certain degree, and this was the culmination of a variety of forces, which I think paints a pretty, for some, compelling narrative. But at the same time, the difficulty that we find ourselves in, and then many of the chaplain friends that I have find themselves in currently, is what do you do now with this, like what's the vehicle, or what are the sort of steps that are going to be taken now to clarify this, particularly given the fact that the whole question of the jurisdiction and its relationship to the ACNA is now up in the air itself. I mean, what does a presentment look like to a bishop now who theoretically is, I mean, is he under the discipline and authority of the province, or is he not? I mean, is this or I think these are questions that have complicated the matter greatly.
Before we answer that, Jeff, it's I don't know how much Bishop Jones has been pushing that narrative of this being as a result of his anti-wokeness, but I do know that a lot of people who are his surrogates and his supporters, chaplains and other people online, have definitely been pushing that line. So it doesn't just go back to that one thing that he said about his response to people having their feelings hurt. This is a wider, the
Well, I
whole,
agree with that. I
right?
just
So
wanted to
it's
just to
important
be
to point
clear.
out, so it's important to point out that Bishop Dobbs and the two other bishops who signed the inhibition are not woke, and that most likely Bishop Sutton was fully in support of the whole proceeding. So, okay, go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry, I
But
didn't mean to.
I do think, Matt, to that point, not to, I mean, I want to maximize Jeff's time here, but it does speak to what we spoke about last week, is that they're within the jurisdiction, at least my friends, many of my friends in there, and just practically speaking, it does represent sort of a counterbalance to, well, for instance, the Diocese of Sevier-Aux, like, or at least
Yeah,
it's
I'm right.
self-perception. And so I think that it does speak to, not to conflate the issues, but I think that the reactions out there from a knee jerk, when they see this, it does highlight some of the difficulties that we've been talking about for weeks now, which is that, founded or unfounded, there is that underground conversation that hopefully on the other side of all this unpleasantness we'll still get to return to, without conflating the issues and actually, bring people closer together somehow. Anyway, but I agree with you, Matt, that I, and Jeff also, I just wanted to, for the sake of, just the factual statement, just in case someone was listening with a more critical, less forgiving ear, wouldn't just dismiss us for, which I'm sure our listener wouldn't have stuck around this long had that been the case. But at any rate, so yeah, Matt, I agree with you totally.
Well, I can give some of the alleged abuses that have been talked about, and then just to go over them quickly, it's alleged that there was backdating in of church documents. It's alleged by two chaplains that Jones went after them to interfere with outside employment after they departed. And then the last one is others allege that he inflicted, quote, financial, emotional, and psychological stress. And that last part is what Jones was dismissive of saying, oh, thank you, Woke USA. So that's the context of the allegations of what are talked about. Now, we don't have tons of details because obviously the province isn't releasing this at this point in time because, again, there's no presentment. However, I have spoken off the record with a number of different chaplains or I've spoken granting anonymity. And they have outlined a series of concerns that they have had, and they have provided some documents. One of the ones that is probably the most interesting, I think, is they allege that Jones basically had a pay-to-play tithing policy. And this was a policy that mandated all clergy endorsed by the jurisdiction give 10% of their income directly to the jurisdiction before giving to their church or Christian ministries. Now, if you look at the documents, there is some nuance there, but basically, it's a pretty extensive, very specific, multi-page document that has to be signed off on by a chaplain, which says, I'm going to give 10%, and then within that 10%, I can give up to a quarter of it to my local church, and then there's a series of about six or seven approved ministries that they can give up to 10% of that to. But ultimately, the concern is that the jurisdiction is organized as a nonprofit 501c3 tax exempt organization. And organizations like that cannot mandate, well, you cannot mandate financial contributions to such organizations as a condition of employment. That's pretty clear in law. However, the jurisdiction only employs a handful of people. What they really do is provide endorsement. And whether that restriction also covers endorsement is less clear. But I think this is relevant because in order to be a person in good standing with the jurisdiction, you have to go and agree to this policy and implement it. And then on top of that, you then would get an endorsement from being in good standing, and then that would allow you to serve in your employable role in the military. So I think that is one of the issues that is going to be intriguing to see going forward is this legal or is there a ministerial exemption that makes this okay? But that is it's very, very specific. It is not simply like a two-sentence thing that says, hey, there's a biblical exhortation to tithe that is given as an example, so I commit to follow that. It is very, very specific. Again, it's been argued by the complainants that this is functionally pay to play.
When the jurisdiction announced that it was, as a whole, pulling out of the ACNA, I think it's common that the first thing you hear has real staying power in your brain. And so a lot of us in the ACNA just assumed, oh, that means that all the chaplains are now gone, that this whole organization and all its chaplains with it are no longer in the ACNA. So even then, when Wood and the province issued their letter saying actually it doesn't work like that, he can't actually take the jurisdiction with him, I think that the idea that sticks in a lot of people's heads is that many, if not most, if not all of the chaplains who were in ACNA are now not. You've spoken to a number of chaplains. I got the impression from your article that your impression is that the number who would stay in the ACNA might be larger than the number that would leave. Is that true?
That is my initial impression, although I give the caveat that this is going to play out over the course of at least a month. So we won't really have a full picture probably for 30 days. And even then, that might be overly optimistic on my part. I will say that I have not personally spoken with any chaplain who expressed a desire to separate from ACNA. Through a number of different interactions, phone calls, social media conversations, direct messaging, they have all conveyed their interest and desire to stay with ACNA as their endorser. So that makes me think that perhaps Bishop Jones, when he and the executive council of the jurisdiction made their decision to withdraw, that they thought that they were speaking for a larger number of people than they perhaps were. The thing I've compared this to is when Chuck Murphy led the AMIA to separate from ACNA and the Anglican Church of Rwanda, which had had a dual affiliation. He thought he was pulling everybody out. And it turned out that at least two-thirds of his clergy and churches ended up staying in ACNA. And in fact, it might have actually been more than that, because I know a few came back into ACNA later. So I suspect, well, it has been argued that there is a coterie around Jones, which is fiercely devoted to him. And as a result of that, it may have given him a false impression of where things actually stood with the average chaplain in the field. But it will take at least 30 days before we know. I do know that conversations are taking place behind the scenes with chaplains making inquiries of ACNA, asking, where does this process lead? And also people have set up appointments with Bishop Jones himself to speak with him and express their desire to remain connected to ACNA. Another thing, question that's afoot as well is just the legality of the endorsing body. The reason that Jones has some cachet is because he was the ACNA endorser. And since he has left that post of his own volition, there he is that position has been declared vacant by the College of Bishops, and they have placed another bishop into that role. And I'm sorry, I'm going to horribly mispronounce his name. Bishop J.
Yang Yang.
Thank you, Matt. He is has been placed into that role, and it is simply a matter of paperwork, from what it has been explained to me by people who have expertise in this, with changing out the endorser from ACNA. And that process has already begun and will be completed within 30 days total. So there are the province has quoted an official from the federal government, who's with federal chaplaincy, who has explained that no chaplains need to be worried and that they will continue with their work uninterrupted during this time period. So that would seem to indicate that it might actually be more complicated for people to leave ACNA than stay with ACNA. I will also say that there is account that from the jurisdiction that they are speaking with other Anglican bodies in order to secure some sort of status. I know Jones has previously said he's been on the record that he's not interested in the Anglican continuum. So he has said that he's speaking to other provinces of the Anglican Communion. I have heard that Nigeria is one of the groups that he's reaching out to because of his previous Kano relationships. I have not confirmed that, and I don't know if that's the case. So I have no idea if he's had conversations to that degree. But We do know that he's not interested in the continuum, and he has to have some sort of Anglican connection in order to be an Anglican bishop.
That's really my next question is so let's say that the ACNA is successful in having the government, the War Department, recognize all the chaplains as belonging to the ACNA and not to the jurisdiction. What happens to the jurisdiction at that point? Do they lose the ability to endorse? What would happen in that case?
They are no longer the endorsing agent of the ACNA. I know that much. Of
Okay.
course, that's not in dispute because Bishop Jones and his executive
Right.
council left ACNA.
Right.
But this is not my field of expertise, so I don't know actually what happens. And that is what a lot of the chaplains themselves are asking. Many of them express feelings that they were blindsided by all of this. And that's why so many of them were on this video call that Jones led, was they just had many, many questions and concerns. So I don't know what happens to the jurisdiction absent its ACNA status. That will be that. That is one of the open questions that people are asking, and that is why there has been so much confusion among the chaplains across the past week and a half.
So is it not true then that the jurisdiction of the armed forces and chaplains is still in the ACNA and J. Kyang Yang is its Episcopal authority? Is that named organization? It's just still a creature of the ACNA, right? So it still exists within ACNA. It's just that Jones and his leadership have left. So there's a sense in which, unless I'm wrong, which I may well be, that the JAFC is still where it always was. It just has new leadership.
The special what's called the special jurisdiction of armed forces and chaplaincy is created through a canonical process by ACNA called Canon 11 that Bishop Phil Ashe actually authored.
Yeah.
So he's actually written about this. Unlike a diocese, which has the ability to sever its relationship through an act of its governing synod, I think that the jurisdiction is created by a canonical process of assembly and can only be changed by assembly. So that is a distinction that is there in canon law. However, much like the departures from the Episcopal Church, there is a disagreement between the Jones and his group. To what degree just the leadership of the group is leading, and to what degree the actual organization is leading. So that could be an issue of legal contention in the future. And I don't know where that would lead, but I do know that Bishop Phil Ashe, who wrote that canon, has said that it is not possible for it to pull out unilaterally. It requires an action of assembly.
Well, that brings up the question. I mean, do you think it's, I mean, I know we don't know what the future holds, obviously, but is it likely that this goes further into the courts, or is it going to, I mean, what have you been hearing? Is there hope for some sort of reconciliation, or is it now just a question of all over but the shouting sort of thing?
It seems like it's on a path where there is not going to be reconciliation. I mean, we could be surprised. There may be conversations going behind the scenes, but my sense is that hearing from Jones in his presentation, that there is not a desire from either him or from his executive council to have reconciliation. And they believe that the ACNA is. They insist is compromised in a way that they couldn't continue on with it. So that makes me think that there probably could be legal action as well. The only thing I've seen with legal ramification is there is a law firm that has been retained by Jones and the JFAC Executive Council, which has sent a cease and desist letter to the Archbishop's office saying that ACNA cannot use the seal and trademark language at Anglican chaplains. But that's the extent of what I have heard so far. It may be far too early to ascertain what the legal ramifications will be. And again, I'm not an attorney, so I do not have an expertise in that area.
Yeah, in your research and writing in this article, you likened it to the departure of the AMIA, and it reminds me of that too. I'm not sure how to even ask this question, but the Bishop Jones, Bishop Jones did seem to have, at least I watched the video, he did seem to have confidence that when he was pulling out, he was going to take the whole jurisdiction with him. That if you're going to, we're leaving and we're taking everybody. And so if you're a chaplain and you want to continue to be a chaplain, you need to link your stay together with me in the thing. You watched the video. I don't know if, I don't remember the Q&A, if the Q&A was part of the video or not. I know he asked for
Oh, this is
questions.
a he actually directed people. He said there was a little bit at the very beginning, but he said direct your stuff in the comments, which is a parallel
Okay.
text chat, and then he would they would go through them and answer from that some of what they could answer, or it would be sort of farmed out to various folks in the group who could best address the questions.
Okay. So
So that was yeah, it wasn't a like a live microphone Q&A. It was just text message pings that were sent in, and then they responded to some of those as they came through.
It seemed, though, listening to it, that if I were a chaplain, I would be concerned. I would be thinking, man, my legitimacy is at stake. My ability to continue to pull a paycheck from the from my job is at stake. And it did seem like he wanted to wield that kind of he was purposely doing that. I mean, it seemed to me that he wanted that to be the impression left upon his chaplains. And so I'm not surprised that there would be some kind of panic beneath or worry, fear at least, behind the scenes. And it does, to me, that's consistent with the charges the brutality and cruelty in the part, at least pastorally. And I know you can't speak to this because you're a reporter, but to me, that sounds very consistent with the charges. That just that video and the strong arming in the video. I mean, he there was no sense of, hey guys, look, this is my position. I'm the bishop of this jurisdiction at this point in time. Here's my case. You get to make you should make the you should decide on the merits who's right, who's wrong. I love you guys. I hope you'll come with me. But if you can't, I totally understand. This is a question of conscience. Feel free to go the direction that the Lord leads you. There was nothing like that in my memory of this video. It was very much, if you're not with me, you're against me. And if you're against me, well, you may not have a job. So, anyway, that's my own take. I know you can't like you can't comment on, and I wouldn't ask you to comment on that. But just the whole thing seems to give credit to the charges.
Yeah, there is a few things that stuck with me in viewing the video. One is how Jones's manner changes across the course of the hour. He's initially pretty low key, and it's filmed, for those who haven't seen it, it's on his back porch. He's in a polo shirt. He's got a kind of a Big Gulp type soda in one hand, and it starts out, we're just kind of pulling this together, and we want to make sure, people hear from us, and I can respond one by one to each of these charges so you understand what they are and what we feel the appropriate response is to these. And then over the course of the hour, it really shifts. And when Jones starts reading some of the messaging sent to the province by his own chancellor, it gets more heated. And then his tone becomes very agitated when he is reading an email exchange he had with Bob Duncan. in which he feels that the former Archbishop, the Archbishop Emeritus, has really not served him well. And that one part of it is what really stuck with me, because I have, as of you, known Archbishop Bob Duncan for a very long time, and I know how he operates, and I have a degree of a good working relationship with him that I've really appreciated. And so to see the anger and vitriol that seemed to be in the voice of Bishop Jones in this, that was quite something. And the thing I would add on top of that is that I was told by one chaplain that Jones is not a shepherd; he is a commander. He issues commands, and he expects his commands to be followed. He is not operating in a pastoral role. Now, I'm sure that Jones would take issue with that characterization, but that is how one of the chaplains relayed how he operates and how he is perceived. You will fall into line. You will obey his orders, and you will be punished if you do not. Now, I'm not someone with a military background, so I don't understand how to put that into that context, but this chaplain is from that background. And he indicated that this is atypical in among endorsing agents within the federal chaplaincy, and that there's something here that is quite different. So that's going to be part of it. And as I mentioned, there was a real expression from a significant number of the chaplains I spoke with of palpable fear that the quote tentacles of Jones are long and that he will come after them. So that fear really governs a lot of how some of these folks are feeling. And I've not had that sort of interaction myself with Jones. My interactions with him have always been positive in regards to things like, the March for Life every year, the theology conference last February, a variety of other things that were very positive interactions. And I, always appreciated the fact that he was a man of conviction, especially on issues of conscience and religious freedom, was really willing to stand up. But as one of the chaplains told me, this is, quote, this is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, end quote. They say that the person you see in some of those contexts is different than the person who is serving under him, many of whom express just real fear.
I mean, there's room for that if you're General George Patton, charging across Western Europe toward Germany, defeating panzer divisions on the way. But he's not,
Well,
right? So
should have gone to
the
Moscow.
right. The question, the thing you quote here, "I will crush you," one chaplain summarized of a series of options Jones gave him. "I will never stop coming after you." I'm sorry. I mean, objecting to that is not. Thank you, woke. That's no pastor should talk to anybody under him, whether you're a bishop talking to your priests,
Yeah,
or a priest
that was in a
talking.
rejected trial liturgy for the original ordinal for
I will crush. Wait, I mean,
2019. It went through a couple of iterations, then
there's just
finally
no.
The amazing
There's
thing
just
is with that, the "I will never stop coming after you" was
yeah.
actually relayed to him via this chaplain's new endorser. So the new endorser was told by Jones, basically communicate to this guy, "I will never stop coming after him," even though you're his endorser now. I'm not his endorser. And this is sort of the thing that's been relayed by these complainants, is that even when Jones has nothing to gain from something, he will still go after people. And that seems to be the characterization that's being made across from multiple complainants that I've spoken with.
Yeah, me, I also, with you, I do admire the stances that he takes, the political stances, and the theological stances he takes, which I think we would agree with. I'd probably agree with him on 99.9% of those stances. It's just that there is a temperament that's required of a bishop, and we of course, there are times when I, as a pastor, and I'm sure that you guys can also say the same when we have not acted in accordance with that temperament. But if there's a consistent, a pattern of crossing, not just living across that line, then I think, well, you shouldn't. I understand wanting to take some action from the part of the on the part of the ACNA to either bring about repentance and restoration, or ultimately presentment and defrocking. I mean, it makes perfect sense that the jurisdiction would want to do that, and it makes perfect sense that there would be a group of bishops who are not united in other things. You couldn't get further apart than Bishop Hunter and Bishop and my bishop, Bishop Dobbs, but that they can agree on this, I think it speaks volumes.
Yeah, and I think one thing too is that these bishops have all been around for a significant amount of time. They are not new on the block. So they've probably had situations of discipline in their own diocese they've had to navigate. They probably had problem clergy. And they are probably going to be sympathetic to some degree to the need to sometimes have a strong hand. But the fact that, this is looking and saying you can't interfere with an investigation. That's what ultimately the inhibition is about. It's not about what he's being accused of. It is making space so that an investigation can take place. And if he is going to issue a directive to his people, telling them that under no means are they allowed to communicate with the Archbishop's office or anyone representing on their behalf, then that obviously means he's working contrary to the province's interest in investigating this fully. The other thing I would just add in too, as a small aside, speaking on restrictions, is that some of the chaplains relayed to me that as part of the jurisdiction, they were not allowed to speak to other endorsers. That's pretty unusual. These folks usually chat quite a bit back and forth with people across different endorsing groups. And it was written, as it was relayed to me, it was written into their requirements that they could not speak with another endorser. And if they did have a conversation with another endorser, they needed to report it to Bishop Jones within 7 days. Well, that's gonna, people are gonna hear that and think, okay, that's a level of control that is, I don't know if Jones is concerned about sheep stealing. Or what his thoughts were on that. But the fact that he did not want anyone under his jurisdiction speaking with another endorser, that is, it has been really, to me, that's extremely unusual.
It'd be maybe like a bishop saying, "You can't talk to any other bishop while you're in my diocese. You have no, you can't go and have any conversations with anyone apart from me about anything."
And if you and if it happens, you got to tell me within 7 days, or it'll be held against you. This is a level of control that the complainants allege. And then there's also this idea too that Bishop Jones very much wanted to consolidate control within the jurisdiction, in that as I think I've mentioned, this is different from any Episcopal church where your canonical residency stays in your local diocese, but you have a suffragan bishop who for the armed forces who then serves over, but you're canonically resident under your diocesan bishop. That's not the case in ACNA. You canonically become resident within the jurisdiction, and that is atypical among other churches that are endorsing agencies. But it points to what complainants allege is a pattern of trying to concentrate power and have very detailed requirements and enforcement in regards to contact with other endorsing agents, in regards to the tithing policy for people who are under him. But for people who are over him, he made an appeal to subsidiarity, basically saying that he was, keeping his distance from ACNA. They didn't really have any oversight over him. And even though Canon 11 says that the jurisdiction is created by the assembly, and there's this role underneath the archbishop's authority. He has argued that there was basically a gentleman's agreement behind the scenes that that would be changed. And that's one of his frustrations in his video presentation that he reiterates, is that that didn't move forward in the timetable that he thought was reasonable.
Well, maybe that's going to be revisited also. I mean, I know we had somebody post on Facebook. I think Drew Collins, he's definitely one of our listeners, our listener, who was saying that, it was atypical of chaplains, at least as far as the Episcopal, taking the Episcopal Church as the model. And, just my practical experience working with chaplains who have been some of the best clergy I've ever worked with. Nevertheless, there was always a little bit of a wall of separation between, their sort of understanding of their membership in the jurisdiction as opposed to the local diocese in the same way, which makes sense. I mean, it wasn't a it was just that was a factor of the reality of the situation. And so maybe that's, among a host of other things, something that in light of this conflict will be revisited and hopefully reconciled and at least worked out. I mean, I think my hope and prayer in all of this, as I've been counseling people that have gotten in touch with me, is just, that, like we've said before, that it's messy and it's complicated, but I do think that there are procedures and sort of protocols in place that when they work themselves out, that by God's grace, there will be enough information to hopefully quell any sort of residual sense of conspiracy theory or sort of nefarious, cabal of woke whoever that has been hunting sort of traditional minded bishops around, that will be laid to rest. I think that we still will be left, as we pointed out, with some significant conversations that need to be addressed going forward. But perhaps on the other side of this, there'll be a deeper sense of collegiality, and it's sort of a family ties that bind, for lack of a better word, in the sense of, that this has been significant, and it, by some people's account, threatens the whole fabric of the ACNA. And certainly it has that outside possibility. But I think what we will see, by God's grace, is that in the aftermath, that we'll be stronger, more sort of sober-minded and clear-eyed about the need for real conversations, and hopefully some of these unspoken agreements that seem to carry an awful lot of weight will be codified and clarified in peacetime. So in the event that we come into conflict again, there aren't these vagaries that allow people to have wildly different interpretations about some of these things that need to just be dealt with forthrightly and straightforwardly. And so that's kind of where I've landed. We'll be back next week with perhaps an entirely different episode about something, depending on what happened. But I know for one, Jeff, I'm grateful for
Yeah, thank you.
your sort of even-handed
Amen.
sort of hand on the wheel reporting this, and your friendship and collegiality with us, condescending to us, wannabe reporters, in such a kind way. But it's
A long time
we're
listener, so I appreciate
well, that's right.
the
Second time appearance, first long time listener. That's right. But we are grateful for you, and continue to pray for the work of the Institute of Religion and Democracy. And are just thankful for your well, just for us pulling in the same direction, and hoping for the best together with you.
Amen. Thank you so much for your time, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, that is going to be all the time that we have today. Thanks for listening to Stand Firm this week. If you want to keep the conversation going with us, you can be in touch, rate and review the podcast on iTunes, send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com, or join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks to JD Koch and Matt Kennedy, and a special thank you to Jeff Walton. I'm Nick Lannon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.